Today, on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
And the retina is sent through an algorithm that looks at pieces of the retina and identifies abnormalities. In this case, things like diabetic retinopathy or diabetic macular edema. When it does that, it can do so with accuracies that are at the level of, or even sometimes better than, an ophthalmologist.
Today, Drs. Patel and Armstrong join the podcast to discuss AI and telehealth in diabetic retinopathy, from screening to specialist care, in this PureDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Nimish Patel. I'm an assistant professor of ophthalmology at Harvard Medical School and the director of pediatric retina, as well as associate fellowship director of the vitreoretinal fellowship.
I'm Grayson Armstrong. I'm the director of ophthalmic emergency services at Mass Eye and Ear. I'm an instructor of ophthalmology at Harvard Medical School and a retina specialist.
Today, we'll be focusing on the current state of AI-enabled screening and telehealth in diabetic retinopathy, as well as referral pathways, clinical impact, and future directions. How does that sound to you, Dr. Armstrong?
Sounds good, Nimish.
Well, since you're actively engaged in both the implementation and evaluation of AI-powered DR and DME screening, as well as telemedicine, can you start us off with a brief overview of what AI is and how is it specifically utilized in diabetic eye disease screening? You've been involved in implementing real-world AI screening programs. What have you learned about the accuracy and practical limitations of these systems compared to traditional screening methods?
Well, Nimesh, artificial intelligence takes many forms, but in ophthalmology, what happens is that they take a photo of the back of the eye, the retina, and the retina is sent through an algorithm that looks at pieces of the retina and identifies abnormalities. In this case, things like diabetic retinopathy or diabetic macular edema. When it does that, it can do so with accuracies that are at the level of, or even sometimes better than, an ophthalmologist. And so in ophthalmology, this is helpful because there are a lot of patients with diabetes, and every single year, there are more and more patients that are going to need our care, but there's only so many ophthalmologists, and the number of ophthalmologists is not growing. So in essence, what we need are tools that are in the community where the patients are that can screen them for diabetes and diabetic eye disease that can potentially be blinding. What we found is that the precision of these tools is very high. In the clinical trials, they're 95%+ precise in terms of sensitivity and specificity, and they do a really good job at getting the result right away. You know, we set up a telemedicine program first where we were able to use a fundus camera to take a photo of the back of our patient's eyes. But then me as a retina specialist, it takes me 1 or 2 days to look at the photo and eventually get the result back to the patient. By then, the patient's already home, and they're not necessarily checking their inbox. They're not checking their portal. So they may miss the result. They may not come in for care. And that's why AI is helpful. It can give you a more accurate result right away as the patient's sitting there in the exam chair before they leave their primary care office, and then we can set them up for follow-up.
And follow-up after AI-generated referral can be a challenge. So let's say they're in this primary care office. What approaches are working to ensure that patients get from this AI screening to treatment without falling through the cracks? Who is responsible for that?
That's a really great question. So that was one of the drawbacks of using the traditional telemedical approach where we took photos of the back of the eye. We found that about 50% of patients were coming in after we sent them into an eye doctor's office, which means that 50% of patients that have eye disease that we identified are not coming in to see an eye doctor after the fact. And we felt like that's totally inappropriate. So nowadays, we've hired a full-time person whose job it is to call these patients and plug them into care. If you identify disease, that's helpful. But you really need to make sure these patients get into care so you can treat the disease and make sure they don't have any vision loss.
And access is becoming such an issue within medicine and ophthalmology. How have AI and teleophthalmology helped reach these patients who may not otherwise receive timely diabetic eye care?
We're primarily using this technology for patients that haven't had an eye exam in at least a year. And what we're finding is that in primary care centers in underserved areas of Boston and broader Massachusetts, many patients haven't had an eye exam in 1 or 2 or more years. We looked at the data at every single center before we implemented our AI program, and over half of the patients were lacking an eye exam in the past year. So in essence, we're targeting people with the highest need. We know that people from underserved backgrounds tend to have worse diabetes and worse diabetic retinopathy, higher risk of vision loss, and so we're targeting those populations specifically. And then amongst that population, we're hopefully plugging them into care faster.
And so what have we learned from this? You've had a lot of experience. Any specific successes or lessons learned? What about someone who wants to start this at another institution? What could you give them? What are your pearls?
Well, first off, there's a few different companies that are creating these AI tools. And so finding one that you're comfortable with and that you trust is really important. After you find that product, you need to find a partnership with community health centers, primary care offices, endocrinology offices, because that's where these tools live. They don't live at the eye doctor's office. They live in the community because you want to capture the patient where they're already going to see the primary care doctor. So if you find a good partner and you have the good technology, the next step is making sure that there's a referral network in place that's appropriate. You know, if you're watching this, you may be an ophthalmologist, but know that there's going to be a lot of patients. And so it's useful to know that you or your colleagues can accept these patients and get these patients into timely care because you don't want these people to be identified and then there's no availability for follow-through.
And so where do you see this heading over the next 5 years? And what are the critical gaps and barriers to adoption? The one that I've heard about is billing or challenges and who's responsible for the information if there's a medical legal problem. Are those being addressed?
Those are being addressed. And there's general consensus amongst the community of the AI technology group and also the physician group that the company that's creating the AI devices is liable if there's a mistake or a problem in the read. And that means that you as the ophthalmologist who's receiving the patient you don't have to worry so much about the liability. The primary care office doesn't have to worry about that liability either. And if something goes wrong, then really it's on the AI company that's creating the device. In terms of reimbursement, there's a dedicated CPT code that's used for these AI devices, 92229. And that reimburses from Medicare roughly $54, $55. And if you do these on a routine basis for your patients with diabetes, then it is self-sustaining because there is a cost for the camera and a recurring cost for the AI to be run on that camera. But it should be at least cost neutral, if not something that can help reinvest in the mission of the practice.
And so what are the other challenges that you've noted?
You know, one of the things that's challenging is making sure that there's enough buy-in from the primary care office in terms of the staff support, because the camera is often operated by a medical assistant or a nurse. And those individuals are already busy. We know that primary care offices are already full, and it's hard enough to find a primary care doctor, let alone ask them to take a photo. It's going to take an extra 4 to 5 minutes per patient. And so you really have to have a team-based approach, really great buy-in from the practice. And ultimately, I've found that if you have ophthalmologists that are willing to be great partners for that program and really be a champion clinically to make sure it succeeds, then everything should go off without a hitch. But it does take some legwork. And of course, there's also the IT integration if you plan to implement this. So the cameras are great. They work very well. They're relatively plug and play, but there is some work to try to make sure that these cameras are integrated into a bigger system.
This has been a great discussion, Grayson, and thanks for joining me today on AI-powered screening and DR in DME.
My pleasure, Nimesh. This has been great. And thank you for joining us today.
And that's today's special spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review in your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, or TuneIn. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Patel and Armstrong. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.